Did you make it in okay? I'd like to open up the Transportation House Committee for February 21st, and we will open up an informational meeting and an update on the Department of Transportation's basically the study and ongoing progress of Highway 205 widening and the Abernathy Bridge project. Welcome to everybody who's joined us this morning, and I'll just let you start, and we'll have questions afterwards.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for the Department of Transportation. We're going to give you the cost to complete study for the I-205 project. Before we get into the presentation, a little bit of context and background for you. Those of you that were following the developments of the House Bill 2017 funding package last session, there was an emphasis on solving congestion in Portland, and that was kind of translated on the highway side into three large projects that were subject of the conversation. Rose Quarter was one of those, Highway 217 was another, and then this project on 205, which is the three-lane 205 between the Abernathy Bridge to Stafford Road. As the bill was passed, there's funding in the bill for the other two projects, but not for this one. There's a requirement in the bill in Section 27 that requires us to do the study that you're going to hear about today, the cost to complete study. We made this presentation to our Transportation Commission in January, and as per the bill, they submitted that report to the legislature at the end of last month. And so we're going to run through the presentation. I think you'll find it a very interesting presentation. I'm sure all of you have driven this section of 205 many times, and I think when you see, especially Steve's presentation today, you'll look at this corridor maybe a little bit differently than you have in the past the next time you drive that. So with me is Brian Windsheimer. He's the Region 1 manager for ODOT, leading the ODOT side of the project. Steve Jehoda from HDR is the consultant that we have working on the project. The two of them are going to walk you through the presentation. So, Ryan.
Thank you, Paul. And with that, we're going to go straight into the report. I'm going to give you a quick overview. We're going to talk a little bit about project cost, the design refinements, some how we explored some of the delivery methods and some opportunities there, as well as the funding needs as we move forward. And with that, I-205 is an important route that connects people with their jobs and freight to market. With some of the highest freight volumes in the state, this I-205 is also designated as a lifeline route that will bring life-saving supplies and services to and through the region after a major quake. Given the very short timeline to complete this refinement work, to get this cost to complete report done, ODOT back in July of 2017 hired a consultant team from HDR to help bring us some additional resources and expertise to get this cost to complete report completed. Today we're pleased to share with you the work that ODOT and the HDR team have done over the past several months and how we propose to reduce congestion and improve safety and seismic stability in the middle corridor. Following my quick overview of the project, Steve Jehoda from HDR will provide an update of project cost, design refinements, delivery methods, and I'll finish with a slide on next steps for maintaining our schedule. I-205 congestion is growing, and the road is not serving users as well as it could be. In fact, this segment of I-205 has some of the fastest growing bottlenecks in the Portland metro area. From 2013 to 2015, the morning congestion period grew by an hour, and the evening congestion period grew from 0 to 3 hours, creating backups that can extend over 9 miles. In addition to longer rush hour, travel times during the PM peak have increased during this period by 40%, adding an additional 12 minutes to each trip. We expect the proposed improvements will reduce peak period travel times by as much as 25% on the day of opening and reduce anticipated 2040 travel times by 50% versus our no-build condition. In addition to reducing congestion, the project is expected to significantly improve safety within this corridor. Today, crash rates within the corridor are higher than the statewide average, with three segments that rank in the worst 10% statewide, near OR 43, OR 99, and the OR 213 interchanges. While all of our improvements in the corridor are being designed with safety in mind, two key types of improvements for addressing safety are the addition of auxiliary lanes to improve merging and weaving distances, like the northbound I-205 auxiliary lane between 99E and 213, which is expected to reduce future crash frequency in that area by approximately 20% to 30%. And the replacement of a signalized location with a roundabout at the OR 43 northbound to I-205 on-ramp. This roundabout is expected to reduce crash frequencies at this particular location by about 40%. As mentioned before, congestion and delay are significant issues for the more than 100,000 daily drivers and nearly 9,000 freight vehicles experiencing the 5.5 hours of congestion a day in this area. The operational improvements on this slide and the addition of a third lane in each direction to the only remaining two-lane section of I-205 will significantly improve the situation. But this is also very important for meeting our seismic resiliency goals and for reducing the time it would take Oregon's economy to recover following a major quake. In addition to addressing the bottlenecks, this project includes seismic retrofitting and widening of the 2,700-foot-long Abernathy Bridge, seismically retrofitting and widening five additional bridges on I-205, and the replacement of eight bridges, which includes meeting the seismic resiliency criteria. Interstate 205 is a seismic lifeline route, and this project will significantly increase the seismic resiliency in addition to providing badly needed congestion relief. And now I'd like to introduce Steve Drahota. He's our Vice President of HDR Consultant. Steve's the project manager for both completing this report and for completing bridge and roadway project design through the design acceptance phase, which is about a 30% level of design. Today, Steve's going to walk you through many of the criteria we used to complete this report and update you on many of the design refinements we've made up to this point. Thank you, Steve.
Hi, so thank you for having me, number one. So when we took this project, or we being the consultant team, it was really to validate the work that HODA had done up through 2016. Look for opportunities for design refinements, look for ways to save some money, look for innovation, and not just what the project is, but how to deliver it, how to package it, how to bundle it. I'll be talking about all of those today. And then updating, ultimately, the cost for the project. Ending up in this cost of complete report that we developed in conjunction with ODOT. And this team that we had is a combination of our design consultant team, contractors who are very instrumental in the packaging process, the risks that come with this, and how to develop the various parts and pieces, and then ODOT's technical team to help provide insights into other elements that are unique to this job. So we ended up in a place that's very, I think, promising for the project. As we approach this, we really had to look at some design philosophies because, again, this project doesn't do everything for everybody. And it's really focused on adding a third lane and in both directions on the freeway, creating that seismic resiliency like Ryan talked about, relieving congestion, helping the operations, and creating some safety features. So in the process of doing that, we had to make sure that, A, we right-size the project footprint, focus on those attributes, and make sure that we resist building in or tacking on other things to keep the project down. Keep focus on that. Really dive into the appropriate phasing, how best to package this work for economy. Minimize right-of-way and environmental impacts as we're looking at our technical solutions. Make sure to maintain traffic mobility during construction. Obviously, we can't do things that shut down or have an adverse impact to the economy, and then ultimately not preclude future improvements. Again, the focus of this job is one thing, but we have to be smart so that we don't set it up that precludes a future need as we're working through it. So to give a little bit of a touch on what the project is, I'll look at the map, and there is a handout if it's easier to see on that. But basically the project consists of a number of different elements. It's 7 miles long. Orange is the roadway widening itself in both directions. There's a dark green icon that is a little bit hard to distinguish. Those are sign structures, ATM or active traffic management signs, a number of places strategically placed throughout the corridor. There's a location where there's a seismogram that looks almost like a heartbeat. That's where we're going to be doing a seismic retrofit and widening as opposed to a bridge replacement, which is shown as that wrench. In some cases, it was more cost-effective to replace the bridge than to actually do a widening and seismic retrofit based on the needs of the retrofit. And then there are two places in particular at the interchanges of 99E and Oregon 43 where we looked at modifications to the interchanges themselves. Pretty benign. It really goes back to tying into this third lane widening. So that's what this map shows. I'll be getting into next this 3D fly-through animation. And it goes pretty quick. So I'll talk us through it. If we feel like we want to see it a second time, I can certainly run it again because it is pretty fast. So it starts off, and I'll hit the play button here. So it starts off as this overall animation. We're gonna move all the way to the far north end or the east end, turn around, and then shoot west. And so as we're looking at this, and by the way, I hope it doesn't make anyone nauseous, it's a little bit fast. dark white is where the improvements are. So just beyond the 213 sign, you can see some dark white on the left. That's an auxiliary lane, or a lane extension on-off. Lane that's built as part of the project. We're now into the area. We're having a full three-lane widening, our first seismic retrofit and widening bridge at Main Street, and we'll pause here at the OR 99E interchange. Very modest changes to it. It's really just tying in the additional lane to the existing on and off ramps. The Abernethy Bridge itself is being widened and seismically retrofitted, and as we get to the OR 43, you'll notice a couple things. One is there's an existing bridge that's no longer there onto the Abernethy Bridge. We've removed that to consolidate all the movements in that roundabout because the roundabout performance is very good, especially with regard to safety. We also removed the Broadway Street Bridge to promote safety. There's a large rock cut as part of the project because we're shimmying the alignment. We'll be replacing the Sunset Avenue Bridge to create the vertical clearance needed. There's an example of the ATM signage that we'll be putting throughout. And in this stretch, you can really, well, it's hard to tell, which is a good thing, that we're tweaking the alignment ever so slightly, nudging it one way or the other to miss obstacles and obstructions and really minimize that footprint, like we talked about early on. But you can still see that there is enough median or space between the directions as we move towards 10th Street and then beyond, where we're trying to minimize the impact to those groves, those trees that are inside the median. And then Blankenship Road is the last retrofit and widening. From this point beyond, where we looked at retrofit and widening, again, it was more cost effective to replace the bridges. So that includes bridges in both directions at Woodbine Road, and then coming up just beyond Johnson Road overcrossing. And what's unique about just beyond Johnson Road is instead of adding a little bit of widening, we actually changed the location of the northbound or the left side of the freeway to help promote construction, to make it safe during construction. Actually, it costs less because we're able to build new rather than navigate traffic. And so we moved it to the inside a little bit, and then it slowly diverts back to its, let's call it, existing location as we get near Stafford Road. Just beyond Stafford Road is where it ties into the existing third lane that's already there. So again, this project fills a third lane gap over the 7 miles. So before I go forward, you want to see that again, or is that good? Oh, it wants to go again. Mind of its own. So I'm happy to run it again if you guys like, or I can
that's
just keep
okay.
going.
Yeah, fine. I think we're okay. That was great.
Okay. All right. So one of the big questions is, how much does that cost? So when we went back in and took a look at the construction estimates as well as all the other project costs, we developed a number of $500 million. And there's a number of components that go into that. So preliminary engineering, even though that's a funny term, it's really preliminary design planning and where this 30% plus the final design. So all things design related is the engineering component. Right-of-way acquisition, again, because we meandered the alignment, we really have very, very small right-of-way impacts on this project. Frankly, the majority of that $1.7 million is located underneath the Abernethy Bridge because of the nature of how we have to do the work around the foundations. Utility relocations, there are a number of utilities, especially on some of the overcrossings. That we would have to adjust. So this number is called a preliminary number. We haven't done all the coordination necessary, but again, for a project of this scale, it's a pretty small number overall. And then construction, that $450 million is where the lion's share of the cost is. Now, the way we approached developing the construction cost was we did a bottom-up and a top-down estimate. So what that means is we broke the project into all of its various pieces, developed quantities for them based on our 15% design, and then said, you know what, let's look at this with two kinds of contingencies. One contingency is this, what we're calling the construction variability contingency, meaning because we're at only a 15% level, how much do we not know, and what is the risk of that not knowing in terms of the design perspective? So an example of that is the rock cut. We know about how much we need, but it's hard to determine at this early stage is what that cost is because, A, there's a means and methods involved, B, it's going to require blasting, and C, it ties into our construction staging. So we said, okay, that construction variability, let's set that at 20%. Other items where we feel we have pretty good understanding of what we're doing technically, we set much smaller, 0 or 5%. So we went through and actually put some intelligence to all of our cost estimating builds to come up with a number that we feel very comfortable with. And then on top of that, we said, okay, let's just apply a 15% unknowns contingency because, again, we're so early in design, things could come out of us from nowhere. So call it the unknown unknowns. So with that combination, we're at about a 28% contingency level, which is a little bit lower, frankly, than where we would typically be at a 15%, but we've done enough analysis to feel very comfortable with that number. The second element to this cost is, given the amount of inflation that's occurring on the bidding market right now for construction, we said, well, if we use today's prices, we will be out of sync with where we expect this project to be once it goes to bid in a few years. So we sat down with ODOT's expert at forecasting, and he recommended about 3 months ago and then reconfirmed last week a 3% simple escalation on top of the numbers that we have to the midpoint of construction for each of these packages that we'll talk about next. So we feel that this combination of costs and all of these components sets us up with a correct by the aggregate cost of about $500 million. That said, because we're only at a 15% level, we wanted to make it clear that there are a number of things where prices could go up, prices could come down, and somewhere we're just sort of saying, you know what, we just need to do more engineering, so call it good for today. So a couple examples of that. First, the Abernathy Bridge. A very complicated bridge, lots of seismic analysis, variable geologic conditions. All that means a lot of work has to happen. The good news is I predict going forward is I think the costs that we've used today could come down based on what we're finding when we do this very rigorous, intensive analysis on the Abernathy Bridge. So that's a place where I'm saying, okay, I can see some reductions in costs happening on that element of the project. However, number two, similar to what I just talked about in my example earlier, because there's more work on the rock cut and it could result in longer construction staging, the need to have tighter control to the contractor, which usually means prices go up. I could see the rock slope removal and the maintenance of traffic actually increasing versus what we have today. And then the third example, construction staging. This is where we just have to do the detailed work of how do we stage it in all the micro pieces. So this is a place where, yeah, there could be some opportunities where the cost comes down, or frankly, it could go up subject to where we go. So all this said, again, we think that $500 million number at the aggregate level of all these risks is the right place to be, knowing full well that things will change in the future.
I have a question for you, Representative Vial.
I've got a couple of questions about cost, if I might. And maybe this is better for Paul or Ryan, but Steve, if you know, what have we spent so far on this project?
Chair McLean. Representative Vial, we've spent about $4 million so far.
Okay.
Since we've started the contract.
I've never quite understood the 10% engineering cost on road projects. I've done lots and lots of commercial buildings, for example, where my engineering and architectural was 2%. And that seems to be about right for a lot of the commercial construction work that I've seen. Why in road work do we typically see a 10% engineering cost?
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, there are two very different types of construction. In fact, they have two different terms. One's vertical construction, one's horizontal construction. Yep. And so in horizontal construction, we're touching many, many more things than you are in vertical construction. Vertical construction, your site is very, very small relative to horizontal construction. And your knowns about that relatively, or in fact, very small sites, are much easier to access and much easier to know what those are. Your design elements in a project like this, when we're touching just this rock cut that we're talking about, the amount of work we've got to do to understand that rock blasting, the blasting we're going to do, the impact potentially to the homes in that area, to potentially to the traffic in that area, how we need to design that and orchestrate that with the rest of the project is a very complex piece of work that we need to do. And as Steve's talking about, there's still a lot of unknowns that we've got to put together to make that work. So putting all those pieces together in horizontal construction, that's across the country, across the world, the numbers that we're talking about in the 10 or even 15% are standard numbers that are typical of any project. In fact, some of our smaller projects, they'll actually be higher than that on a percentage basis. So those are very typical numbers in horizontal construction. And I understand they're very different than vertical construction, but they're two different animals, I guess, is what I'm trying to describe.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So what we've been talking about to this point has been about the what of the project. We're now going to talk about the how and even the when. So the big question on the table, frankly, one of the more fun questions to solve on the table was, how do we take this 7-mile corridor with all these different elements and break them apart, if we should break them apart, into a packaging that makes sense? So the first step we did is started to brainstorm, and this is where it was very helpful to have our contractors with the design team to say, okay, how would we go about doing the work? Where are the risks in constructing the work? And how should we package everything together? So we went through and brainstormed a number of different scenarios. We came up with 6 feasible scenarios. There were a whole slew of others that we thought about that didn't turn out to be feasible. One example is, okay, let's just do all the bridges at one time, sort of thinking about one specialty contractor. Well, when you do that, you still have to connect back to the roadway, and there's temporary construction, and there's access, so it became infeasible to just do all the bridges. So we came up with a series of different scenarios for phasing. It ranged all the way from one mega project, that full $450 million of construction, to another one in the feasible range of 7 different separate projects broken down in different places. And this was shown in our cost complete report as Appendix E. Where we ended up through a process of qualifiers or criteria that are shown on this page is the alternative that's being shown. I guess a little step backwards. For each of those alternatives, we developed a timeline, generally speaking, a cost of each of those packages, and then measured them against these 6 different criteria, ranging in some cases from double negative, it really hurt one of these criteria, all the way to double positive, like you see a lot of on this particular option that we recommend going forward with. So this option has basically 3 construction packages. The timeline at the bottom is roughly when they would be placed. The one very small upfront package C, that's that active traffic management, those signs that we can then use to help motorists during construction. It actually costs less overall versus bringing in temporary signs and placing them all over. So we're using it, constructing it early and using it to help motorists during construction. And then package A, which is really shown in yellow on the graphic. It's the interchanges on either side of the Willamette River, the Abernethy Bridge itself, and then that extension to the north for the northbound Oxline. So that package itself is about $248 million of construction with a timeline of construction, early part of 2020 all the way through mid-2024. And a large part of that is driven by all the work that has to happen in the river and in-water work permits and restrictions that happen there. Package B is in blue, which is the extension of the roadway and all the other bridges that go with it. from essentially close to the OR 43 interchange all the way to Stafford Road. And then, like I said before, Package C is that upfront work. So this combination of three packages, I kind of use the Goldilocks principle. There's a number of them where it's just too big. You don't get the cost efficiency because, frankly, the competition drops off when you have a mega single mega job. If they're too small, there's lots of moving parts and dependencies, overlapping construction work areas, and you don't get some of the cost economies like the rock blasting. Where do you put all of that rock, that 85,000 cubic yards? Well, if you keep it with a roadway job, you use it as a base layer when you're redoing the roadway. So examples like that are all the things that we work through to come up with what we think is the optimal solution and scenario for going forward. So in coming up with this, and you can see that it has very strong scoring, double pluses or pluses across the board, which was very important to us as we selected this one. So then the next question is, okay, now that we have this option, what's the best way to deliver it? And what that means is either low bid or something more innovative like design build, where the contractor is charged with the final design and the construction, or a hybrid of the two. Mm-hmm. So we went through and developed a schedule for each of the different construction methods or delivery methods, and found that A, there really isn't a significant time savings for design build, which is usually one of the things that drives us to go the route for that alternative delivery. Low bid, well, we're maybe missing the mark a little bit on getting some of the quality contractors for those unique project elements, the rock cut itself on an active freeway. Well, you want someone who's done that before. The seismic retrofit for a large steel bridge where you're drilling large diameter shafts in the water. You want someone who's done that before. So ultimately, we landed on this design bid build best value contracting. So it's a combination of low bid plus qualification factors so that you get the right contractor at the best price. So it becomes the best value. And so we recommended that for the two largest packages. And then package C, which is, again, that small $5 million package, we said, you know what, let's go traditional low bid on that. There's enough competition, and there's enough local contractors that can do that work. So that's how we ended up with the different options and recommendations for the delivery method. So with that, I'll turn it back to Ryan.
Thank you, Steve. Chair McLean, members of the committee. I know that was a lot of information. We want to leave plenty of time for questions, but I'd like to give you a quick update on funding availability and what we're thinking in terms of next steps. As we began this effort with about $15 million to refine our cost and delivery approach and continue project development efforts, which again is about 20-30% of design of both the bridge and the roadway work. We expect that work will be completed on budget in about October of this year. In order to remain consistent with the assumptions used in the cost to complete report that Steve described, additional funding needs to be identified before then to continue this work. The chart shows how much would be needed to get through the remainder of 2018 and through 2019 in order to maintain our schedule and the cost assumptions contained in the report. Delay in the project development schedule would likely mean increased costs, increased future costs as a result of inflation and remobilization needs associated with stopping and restarting the work. And so we wanted to share this information with you. I thought it was important so that you could see that now and could inform our dialogue and the project moving forward.
Madam Chair, I just want to reemphasize that last point that Ryan made. So the cost that we assumed, that the $499, $500 million, the sequencing, all that is based on the assumption that there's money available and we are going to be on track with those different dates that Steve went through. If money doesn't come, then those assumptions are true, and the cost would likely go up, and we may, you know, approach the project differently. But we approach this cost to complete under the assumption that we would be able to, the funding would be available, and we would move as quickly as possible into the project.
Well, I made a commitment when I voted for 2017 that will happen, that the money will be available, and we will finish one of these three big projects. So we've got to figure out how to do that, yeah. Committee. So it's got to happen. I mean, that was a commitment we made.
Right.
And it also would undermine our strategy on congestion if we don't do it. So we realize that there's always timing issues, but we're here to make sure that our committee and others that are interested in the legislature, you know, understand this project and understand our commitment to it and understand that it is a three-pronged stool that we made a commitment to and that we want to continue to work on, and we appreciate all the detailed work. Thank you. I would see if there are any questions for our presenters. I wanted to give you a shot.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. All right. Yeah. Because we're, well, let me ask you directly. The chair has said that she's made a commitment. According to House Bill 2017, do you see the legislature committing fully to this project absent funding?
Madam Chair, Representative Meek, you know, as the chart illustrates, to keep the momentum of the project going, there's $34 million just over the next year and a half. As we presented this to our commission, they were also very anxious about how we come up with different scenarios to do that. Our commission back in September did add money to this project. The $15 million that is funded so far has come from funding approved by our commission on the federal side of our revenue sources. We'll continue to look for opportunities at that federal level, the different grants that we've applied for in the past. We'll continue to look for those opportunities. Those come with very large match requirements with them, and so those have impacts on the rest of our program. But I think the message, I think we're all kind of in this together, legislature, local communities, as well as ODOT and our commission, is how we can figure out a path forward with this project.
Representative Vile.
Fully engaged, I think, on trying to help find that money. There's no question about it. We got to do it. Help me with what's the blue vertical line relative to the red line? What is that? I'm not following the chart.
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, that's the expenditures that would take place in those various packages, and the red is the total Steve, I got that right?
Yeah.
Is that the accumulation of the dollars, the expenditure.
So that the blue is essentially just the timing on outlays.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Right. So you get to the total there at the end, the 499.6 is the total outlay.
So this, if I may, the vertical is on the blue is measured on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
The red line is measured on the right-hand side.
Right.
I see.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So the question that comes to mind as I look at the map is what happens north of here, and the fact that we're already essentially in a congested state a significant part of the day going up north of this project. Is this going to exacerbate that?
Chair McLean, Representative Vile, we actually have several projects that are funded and set for delivery that are going to improve some of those sections. One is we call it the Trigger Project that runs from a lane that runs from Powell up to 84. That's something that we have to deliver very, very quickly. We're in the process of doing that. That will help improve the flow at that location. We also have two additional auxiliary lanes currently scheduled for construction. One of them runs from Interstate 84's on-ramp to 205. It runs up to Columbia Boulevard. So that will improve the flow and the merging and weaving through that section. We also have a lane that's set from the 84 as it's going eastbound to southbound 205 that will also run to Powell. So there are a number of locations there where we have identified bottlenecks that are causing congestion today that we will be relieving and improving. This will then be able to improve the flows through this particular section, and we'll have to continue through the process of addressing those as we move forward. But this is the only section that is two lanes today that will now be three lanes. And so that will provide a more consistent cross-section across the corridor.
When's that eastbound 84 to the airport project supposed to be delivered?
It's going to construction beginning this summer.
Okay.
and it's a two-year construction job.
Representative Salinas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has ODOT already requested the $34 million from the legislature so we have that near-term funding?
Madam Chair, Representative Salinas, we have not made a formal request for that number. The requirement for us was to come back with this cost to complete that contains that, as well as the other, the broader number, the $500 million number. But we have not made a specific request for that $34 million.
Okay, and then if you haven't, then what are your plans to help us achieve that, or is there something we can do to help you achieve that?
Madam Chair, Representative Salinas, it's really this presentation to put this on the table for all of us to begin to figure out how we can kind of solve the puzzle. Yeah.
And this was the first commitment. I mean, they had to present this to us in January.
Yeah.
And they presented it to the commission. Now they're presenting it to us.
Gotcha.
So now we get to take all this information, and then we get to be a team.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A big team. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know that the state of Oregon, ODOT, has a lot of projects that we're working on as part of House Bill 2017. And where do you see this project on the list of priorities of how we're going to fund these different projects? I understand the Rose Quarter is funded through the House Bill 2017, correct?
Right.
And when is that projected to start? I believe there is funding mechanism as part of future dollars coming from the increases. When is that project start? And then, is there some type of model, or I've heard a lot about tolling and trying to decipher whether we're going to toll I-5 alone, 205 alone, both together consecutively. What are your thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Meek, several questions. I'll take a couple of those, and I'll have Ryan help me out with Rose Quarter and a few others. So from a priority standpoint, this project is a high priority for the department and for our commission. As we talked about in House Bill 2017 and traveled around the state, this section of 205 was cited nearly in every corner of the state as being a congestion bottleneck that affected the entire state. We recognize that, our commission recognizes that, and so it's a priority for us, and that we've have in the past requested federal grants for, and we'll continue to look for any possibility we can to fund the project. I'll have Ryan talk about the Rose Quarter project.
This project, Chair McLean, Representative Meek, this project, the I-205 project, is now at a stage of design that is slightly ahead of Rose Quarter, and the Rose Quarter project is funded in further in the out years. And so this project, if it were to remain on its schedule, would actually potentially be built before Rose Quarter.
Thank you.
And follow-up.
You have a follow-up?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, please.
Madam Chair. Also, what type of, with grants or federal matches, what type of alleviation or relief do we think we could possibly achieve through federal grants or funding? $10 million, $100 million, $50 million?
Madam Chair, Representative Meek, it's hard to tell. The grants that we put in for have been, again, Ryan can help me with this, but in the $50 to $75 million range that we've asked for funding, but that takes a considerable amount of match, sometimes as much as that much, again, in match money. And so then the challenge becomes, where does our match come from to match those federal dollars?
Thank you. Because a follow-up with that is that I believe there was a budget note put into for the I-205 project as part of the House bill at the end of the year last year, that if we were shovel-ready. And so it sounds like mostly if we can continue this next $34 million of projects, we will be pretty darn close to shovel ready then.
That's the goal.
Lacking any right-of-way acquisitions.
Yes, so. Correct.
Great. Well, I recommend we get to that $34
million.
Yeah.
In terms of long-term funding, have we made any progress in conversations with potential private partners on a perhaps portion of the project being funded through a tolling mechanism or a user fee mechanism at all?
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, we do have the tolling study that we're doing in the Portland Metro area that includes I-205 and I-5. That conversation is on its own pathway. Potentially some point in the future, as that develops and this project develops, there may be overlap between those conversations, but right now they're independent conversations.
I want to just ask, his term, private,
yes,
private tolls is where he's going, I think, with this, and I don't believe in the seven different scenarios that we looked at a private toll versus a public toll. Is that true, or did we?
Well, that's part of why I asked the question, yeah. Madam Chair, is that I don't, and I hear you, Paul, that those conversations are kind of heading on different tracks right now. I'm wondering if maybe we ought to reconsider whether merging those conversations now might not be a good idea, and give some of the folks that have been circling us with proposals for public-private kind of funding mechanisms.
Right.
If we don't start that conversation now, it's unlikely that they're going to develop with the kind of timeline that you were looking at. So it's kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They're on parallel tracks. I don't think they're on separate tracks. I think they're on parallel tracks.
Well, that's why I brought it up, Madam Chair, because I'm hearing Paul say is, no, really are on separate tracks.
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, while they're separate kind of projects and separate tracks, they're not happening in isolation to each other. There's a lot of common staff and a lot of common local as well as ODOT staff that are engaged in watching on both sides of those conversations how they develop. But there's not a formal connection between the two at this point.
Anybody in charge of that conversation? Is that you? Are you the guy in charge of that conversation at this point?
There are several of us at the department that are, yeah, okay. in that link, yes.
All right, thanks.
Any other questions? Well, this is really important. I was really looking forward to this, and this committee, as a House Policy Transportation Committee, wants to stay up to speed on all issues transportation, and I think we have a big commitment to seeing 2017 on the ground and completed, and this is an important element in that overall strategy. Right. So thank you for all of your hard work, and thank you for bringing this information to us today.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Brennan.
Oh, so Madam Chair, I think we are efforting to try and identify and narrow down an additional informational topic for Monday's meeting.
Right.
One of our potential meeting topics that we had for next week has unfortunately had to fall through because of an availability of a person coming in from out of state. The Speaker's office is also informing Madam Chair that as we get closer to the end, which will be starting next mm-hmm. week, there's a potential for pushing floor session starting times early and earlier.
Yeah.
So it's possible our meeting time may shorten. So they're encouraging us to think about doing informational meetings earlier rather than later.
Oh, okay. The one thing I will say, the vice chairs and I met, and I think we've said this once before, but we'll say it again. We had freight train updates and also safety for the passenger and Amtrak to be a one. And then also we had mega projects. And the mega projects one is really related to what Representative Vile talked about private-public, connections on some of our big projects. And so we might get more of an update on the Rose Quarter. We got a little bit of a taste of that today. And then also just, again, trying to make sure we know what's going on with all the studies and all of the committees that are working on advising us on some of the ways that we're going to be doing the 2017 bill and actually getting some of this work on the ground. So if there's anything else, we didn't hear from anybody else as far as I know. Is there a preference on train versus bridges and mega projects?
I'd make a project.
Well, we already know Representative Vile says mega projects. Yeah, we know that for a fact.
That's what you want?
Sure. Well, anyhow, we'll talk some more about it. From what our staff said, we probably will have to go with an 8 o'clock next week, correct?
I think it'll depend on what we put on the agenda for.
Okay. So we may have to. So please watch your schedule and make sure that you know if it's 8 or 8:30 so you don't have a frustrating morning. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to recognize that Clackamas County Commissioner Paul Savas is here.
Thank you.
And I wanted to see if he had any input he'd like to, or anything you want to put on the record related to that report we just received.
We're still in open conversation, so please come forward for the informational on 205.
Well, good morning. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity this morning, Chair McLean. Members of the committee. I have a few talking points.
Can you please just give your name for the record?
Oh, yes. Paul Savas, Clackamas County Commissioner. Clackamas County strongly supports action being taken to ensure that the I-205 bottleneck remains on track and that it ultimately receives the project funding necessary for construction. Over the years, the applications we've talked about and offered some funding, but we don't have deep pockets to fund interstate project of this magnitude. So we are looking to how we can to partner with ODOT in the state in making this project happen here. I think our constituents in Clackamas County walked away in June of last year wondering how we're going to fill that gap on Interstate 205. And I think that really remains the quandary. We talk about tolling. I sit on the tolling committee in the metro region. We are looking at those scenarios and hope to have a outcome come this June. We have asked for more time recently, so the commission has authorized, and I know that the Metro JPAC committee has asked for a bit more time, not necessarily for public involvement so much as for analysis. There's an issue with cut-through traffic currently because of congestion. We have people that are exiting off of Donald exit on I-5, cutting through Canby, cutting through Aurora, cutting through Oregon City to circumvent the traffic. Just as West Lynn on Willamette Drive, people are taking off the freeway. They're cutting through Lake Oswego. They're cutting through Milwaukee. They're cutting through everywhere to avoid the traffic. So this is a safety issue when we have interstate traffic that should be stay on the highways, exit the highways. As we all know, I-205 is a federally owned and state managed facility, which sets it apart from other transportation facilities. But I just want to just get on the record that Clackamas County supports the project and is looking for ways to make this happen. I'm happy to take any questions.
Representative Vile.
Paul, I've been really curious about the request to extend the time frame to look at the user fee piece, that whole conversation, and I've been critical of it, to be honest with you, but maybe I'm reevaluating hearing your testimony. Give me a little bit more about why you think we need more time to look at that.
Chair McLean, Representative Vile. Let me just put a little bit of meat on the bones here so I can explain that. Thank you for the question. We are underway in the region on our regional transportation plan, and we just got a preliminary draft analysis of that. Our staff have looked at that. Well, it was looked at a regional level, but we've looked at it at a sub-regional level. And we've one quote in there, for example, says that by 2040, if we implement the regional transportation plan, 76% of the region will have access to transit. That's not bad. But when you look at it sub-regionally, in Clackamas County, only 22% of the Clackamas County residents will have access to transit. So what alternatives would Clackamas County residents have other than a car? Majority, because we don't have the rich transportation alternatives that we do in the north part of the region. So we work as a region, but we don't spend as a region. We spend sub-regionally. So the areas that are well-served in the region received a substantial amount of funding, and the areas that are underserved, because we spend sub-regionally, fall farther behind. Clackamas County is one of those regions, or parts of the region, where you're falling farther and farther behind. So I guess that the reason we have asked for more time is that analysis. And it just happens to be this convergence of the regional transportation plan, talk about a regional bond, talking about tolling, all these things coming together. There's a lot of unknowns out there. And on behalf of the constituents of Clackamas County, that's why we felt a little bit more analysis would be needed.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
If you'll let me ask a question first. Because well, I have to,
you're the
do
boss.
This.
You go ahead.
This is Mr. Vice Chair that I have to cut in sometimes. First of all, remember why we're here today. Today is to keep that commitment for the three legs of the stool. You saw the map, and you saw when the funding stops and when we have to get creative. And I have not been critical of anything. I don't get critical of my metro partners and friends. But I've lived in Clackamas County. I've lived in Washington County. I've gone to school in Multnomah County for a short summer or two. And we're all in this together. It's not Clackamas County, Multnomah County, and Washington County. It's our counties together, because we make a system, and those three parts are part of a system. And so I think we can do analysis without stopping or slowing down. We can do more analysis where and if we need it in the future, because that's what that map, that's what this map is all about. Is you're looking at 2018 all the way through 2024 and beyond. So anything that's transportation, anything that's transit is ongoing. It never stops. And so I just want you to know that I'm making a commitment, you know, as long as I'm here, and I'm pretty healthy. And it's a situation where we made a commitment together that we're going to build this, and all three prongs will be built. And as far as the, you know, as far as the regional transportation plan, that also is an ongoing document. It's a living document. There is no beginning. There is no end. So I think that we're speaking the same language. We want good analysis. We want to make sure that we have thorough analysis. We want to make sure that we don't have pockets or gaps of service. But we want to make sure that we go forward in a way that we can commit to completing our bill 2017 and actually, you know, getting what we promised the taxpayers we were going to do. And so that was my oratory for this morning. And now I will go back to Vice Chair Vile for some kind of another question or
a follow-up. I'm trying to make this, a question. I'm working on a question.
Okay, there you go.
I'm not disinclined to agree that maybe a little more comprehensive look at this on a regional basis relative to what the struggles of the subregion questions might be. And so let me throw this into the mix. I've got a funny district where I've got Clackamas County and I've got Washington County. So I've got all the way over on the west, and then I've got Wilsonville over on the east. And Wilsonville is screaming about the traffic congestion basically from the 205 all the way to south of the Boone Bridge. Understandably so. Logically, it seems to me that we have burdened the less affluent portion of our region with an effort to take the pressure off I-5 vis-a-vis the 205 connection. And if we were to add to that solution a west side north-south solution, we could actually benefit the east side significantly. But I still don't see that appearing in any part of the regional transportation plan. If you had more time as an east side guy, do you have a sense that that conversation might actually begin to emerge?
Chair McLean, Representative Vile, we kind of have, in a sense, tried to do that, and we tried to do that at the Region 1 Act level. We're trying to have that actually a very holistic analysis of what do we do with our system? Is it in phases? So the three bottlenecks came up specifically, and tied into that also was the Southwest Corridor project as well, which would relieve congestion on the west side and feasibly possibly relieve congestion for that's bypassing on a 205, to your point. But to do one project alone, like I-205, and not do the Rose Corridor and not do 217 would not be a very good strategy. That's why it is. It's a combined strategy. We have been, the region has been on board. So we've been supporting one another, supporting the three bottlenecks, knowing that it's a part of a regional solution. And if there's another phase of that for the next step of regional solutions in that whole systematic problem-solving issue, then so be it. But right now, this is a big hurdle to climb from a funding standpoint, and we were on board. We were on board with the concept of a regional surcharge and actually excited. I was one of the people that was active in the metro region trying to come up with an idea and a solution to look at that. What would be the second phase? What would be those solutions? But we didn't get that regional surcharge. That would be ideal in the sense of being able to build the projects. That gets to your question.
I do want to say one other thing. You know, we talk about regional significance. Those three projects are of state significance, and that's what you want to keep saying to us, because that means we should be bringing state funding. And so it's both regional, but everywhere we went, it didn't matter what corner, it didn't matter where we were in the state of Oregon, they said, fix it. And the fix it was the I-5 was 205 and was 217. And I want to acknowledge that, you know, living, I told you as a child in Clackamas County, that it's one of those things where, yes, there's, and we need to consider that as a system so we don't get the bleed off of folks. But we, if we're going to do that, we've got to make sure that it's good for everyone. And I'm committed. I was hoping to get light rail out to Oregon City so my mom could take her first train ride from there. Didn't happen, you know, before she died, but I'm still committed to making sure that we help all, you know, parts of the communities, both in all three of those areas, to be able to have some of the same services or services that are comparable. But I really want to thank you for being here today, and we have to be, I'm going to let you have the last word, as long as nobody else has a question, but we have to be somewhere in about 4 minutes. So, Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Savas, for coming today. I just, we're related to the potential request or the current request to delay it a little bit. One of the questions I have for you is, do you see, if you have this report and analysis coming back, are there any potential mitigating factors that we can implement that would alleviate some of that? And because absent any alternatives to alleviate or mitigate, I would probably not be in support or favor of canceling or delaying this, the moving forward of potential.
Chair McLean, Representative Meek, I don't think there's any request to cancel, you know, cancel any analysis. We're on board with the study, the tolling study, and we'll see the different the scenarios we have. If indeed the mandate is to toll, there's express lanes, I think, that would give and alleviate a lot of the pressures or mitigate the consequences. If it's mandatory tolling and all lanes are tolled, I think that would have the harshest outcome, most critical outcome for residents of Clackamas County.
Right.
So,
well, I thank you, Commissioner, for that, because I agree. We make sure we get really good input and do the right
absolutely.
Thing. So thank you.
Thank you so much for
thank
being
you.
Here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Folks, thanks for staying with the conversation, and thanks for being here this morning. And if there's anything else for the good of the order, otherwise, we'll close the